You are listening to the Political Periscope, a weekly podcast brought to you by Radio WNET. Interviews on international politics, security, geopolitics, economy, and more. Every Thursday at 7 p.m.
Today's guest of the Political Periscope is Robert Lupitu, Editor-in-Chief of Calea Europeana, the main EU and transatlantic affairs media outlet in Romania.
Political Periscope.
3Cs Initiative Summit in Bucharest in Cotroceni Palace. Already a second summit. How did it happen that Romania had this, well, let's call it presidency because of the lack of better word in the 3Cs initiative already for the second time?
We can call it that maybe we got lucky, but considering the history of this initiative that started almost 8 years ago when the presidents of Croatia and Poland decided to announce this type of gathering, this type of putting together the region on the sidelines of the General Assembly of the United Nations and then having the first summit in Dubrovnik. Then in 2017, the summit in Warsaw, where the US president back then, Donald Trump, attended the summit. It was a pretty huge impact for the region or for a US president coming and delivering such an impetuous speech of support for the former US Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld used to call a new Europe, in contrast with the Western Europe, the old Europe. Then we had the 2018 summit in Bucharest, and I think we did a pretty good job because we had a lot of initiatives that were delivered back then within the 3Cs initiative. We had the 3Cs fund, also the list of the first projects on digital infrastructure and also energy. We also had that small network of commerce chambers that was developed, and also we had the first edition of the business forum. I would not say that in the last years the 3Cs initiative lost traction, but the fact is that in every format you need engines, and probably Poland, Croatia, Romania are somehow engines of this regional development and regional cooperation, considering also their geographic position, because here in our part of Europe we see it in flanks, the eastern flank, north part of the eastern flank, southern part of the eastern flank, but we are in a whole region of this, and probably Romania brings its expertise on the Black Sea, Poland and the Baltic countries for the Baltic Sea, and also the Croatian side for the Adriatic Sea, and now we will see what happens with Greece, because Greece now is a member of the initiative.
Exactly. Well, I think it's a historical moment, Greece joining. It was supposed to join at the beginning, but it didn't happen. What do you think? Well, it's no longer only 3Cs initiative. It's some people say even 6Cs, Ionic and Mediterranean and Aegean Sea, exactly.
If we consider the fact that also the Adriatic Sea is more of a part of the Mediterranean Sea, yeah, we can add to that we are now 6 seas and 13 countries. But I would say that this initiative has a lot of potential. You know that the 3Cs initiative gathers more than 120 million citizens, countries that represent 22% of the territory of the European Union and 28% of the population. But instead of that, those countries represent only 10% of European Union GDP. So I would focus more on the potential force of this initiative, not the real force, because the real force lags. I don't know if you remember, but back in I believe within the summit in Tallinn in 2020, when we had the coronavirus pandemic, the IMF came with a treaty with a study, and they said that this region lacks investment on infrastructures worth on 1,000 billion euros, because we have a big deficit in infrastructure here in this region. So it is very, very important to have a country like Greece coming here, because Greece, it's a hub on energy, it's a hub on also on pipelines, and also it is a hub for the LNG as well, and probably within the dual use of civil military mobility roads and so on.
And Moldova as a partner, because it cannot be a full member because, of course, of the fact that it's not a part of European Union. But I heard also some voices, it's written in the declaration, Western Balkans in the future, maybe Georgia. What do you think? What are the perspectives of enlargement of the Three Seas Initiative?
I think what the leaders of the Three Seas Initiative wanted at this summit here in Bucharest, they wanted to put this initiative, the Three Seas Initiative, within the geopolitical landscape. We had pretty severe consequences of the Russian invasion into Ukraine. And now the Three Seas Initiative wanted to come together and bring closer to the Three Seas Initiative, countries like Moldova and Ukraine, but as associate partners and associate countries, because they are not members of the European Union. So probably this will happen also to the Western Balkans.
And do you think, what's the perspective of possibly maybe including Western Balkans into European Union?
Well, this is a long discussion, because you've seen that now with the strategic agenda being discussed for the 2024-2029 period, the president of European Council, Charles Michel, said that we should put the enlargement on the top of the agenda, because now it's the moment to put the enlargement on the top of the agenda. But firstly, the European Union also needs to be reformed within itself. So I think that when the European Union will enlarge with the Western Balkans, with Ukraine and Moldova, with Georgia, with other countries, there could be also an impetus for the initiative to grow. But I think now that the main focus is for the initiative to grow within the Three Seas Initiative, within those countries, to actually build this connectivity north-south, either for transport, for railways, for energy, the digital high road that they want to build. So there are a lot of projects. I mean, now it's time to deliver, probably.
Exactly, it's time to deliver. There is this Three Seas Initiative Investment Fund that has some money, although it's not the amount that was supposed to be gathered, but it's already investing in some projects, including one certain port in Romania. What is being said here about this investment? Do you know why this particular port was chosen and how did it happen?
Well, there is a project that goes some years ago, the rail to sea that connects the ports of Constanța and Gdańsk, that wants to connect those ports on a rail track. But it's a project that usually we tend to find out of it through, let's say, political communiques or meeting between leaders. We haven't seen many major developments on that. But now the port of Constanța becomes very, very, very important, because from a military point of view, we have over there the Mikhail Gogolnicianu airbase, which is a NATO and US airbase, and it's very important for projecting stability within the Black Sea and also within the Middle East. It was very important also during the withdrawal after Afghanistan. But now it's the fact what happens with the war and what happens with helping Ukraine managing to export its grains through worldwide markets, because it needs so. And now we are focusing on the Constanța port a lot, we as Romania, and also with the help of the European Union and other friends, because we want to build this port, this harbor, to be more powerful, more prepared on a logistic point of view, and more capable of covering lots of transports like this.
Yesterday, during the summit, during the opening remarks, President Volodymyr Zelensky appealed to the presidents of the countries that put embargo on Ukrainian grain to lift this embargo, including Poland, of course. And he said that Ukraine is willing to fight in international arbitrage for it. although it doesn't want to. What do you think is the solution? What should those countries do with this embargo on Ukrainian grain?
The solution is dialogue, and I think we should put this issue under a bit of context. Because what happens in Ukraine, it's painful for Ukraine. And with this illegal war that Russia has waged in Ukraine, it's unacceptable, of course. Also, Ukraine receives a lot of help from NATO countries, from European Union countries, for what we say multi-dimensional support, financial aid, refugee aid, humanitarian aid, and also military aid, of course. And with the grains that Ukraine wants to bring to the worldwide market in order to prevent food insecurity, but also to have money to support the effort of defense, Ukraine needs the support of other countries. And these countries do that because, as President Klaus Iohannis, the host of this summit here in Bucharest, said, Romania is the main route for export within the solidarity lines for the grains of Ukraine. More than 25 million tons of grains cross Romania this year and a half. They are not taxed with this transport of grains. But what happens, and this is an issue of internal affairs of Poland, of Romania, of Bulgaria, and so on, Slovakia and Hungary, is that we somehow find ourselves in the situation where those grains were put on the market here in Romania. And it is an, let's say, unfair competition for Romanian, for Polish, for Slovakian, and for Bulgarian and Hungarian farmers. Let's not forget that here in our part of Europe, the agriculture sector has a strong place within the proportion of our GDP. So, and also we receive a lot of money from the European Union for harvests of cereals, grains, and so on. So I think that if definitely we want to help Ukraine, of course, but if we want to be able, from a financial point of view, we need to take care of our interests. Also, Poland needs to do that, Romania, Bulgaria, Slovakia, all other countries, because we do not have the economic might of Germany and France, for instance, to do so with easiness. And that's why I think it's necessarily a dialogue, because this is a cycle. If Romanian, Polish and other economies prosper, the GDP goes up, and countries like ours can help with money, with different types of aid, Ukraine. And the help for Ukraine is still there. But the fact is that our countries, our officials say that we do not want to have these grains within our markets because it distorts competition.
Today is the business forum of the 3CC initiative. And as I heard yesterday, there are over 1,000 businessmen from all around the world. Yesterday during the summit, there were guests from, for example, Japan. But isn't there a risk that from, let's say, Japan, when you're looking at the map of Central Europe, you see Poland, you see Romania maybe, and some small funny countries somewhere in between, and that those countries of the 3CC initiative, those foreign investments that we are trying to bring here, are going to concentrate in Poland, in Romania, and we're not going to go to those smaller ones?
Well, there is also a lack of, lack of unitary development in the inside of the region, because the countries from the Visegrad group, Poland, the Czech Republic, also Hungary and also Slovakia, are on a bit higher level than other countries like the Baltic countries, like Romania, for instance. We have the example of Estonia, which is very attractive from the digital point of view. We have Croatia, that it's also a very interesting place for investment in tourism, but also in LNG terminals and other terminals because of its harbors and ports within the Adriatic Sea. Yes, we have Romania and Poland as champions of different initiatives and projects, but the fact is that this business forum, initially launched in Bucharest in 2018 and having now its fifth edition back in Bucharest, had other three editions in Tallinn, Sofia, and Riga, and next year it will happen to Vilnius. So there is an opportunity with this. Before the summit, I've read an analysis from the Atlantic Council, US think tank that you know is very keen to this initiative, that they said that maybe one of the solutions would be to build and to create a 3Cs initiative chamber of commerce for all the countries. It might be an idea, because we come from the same region. We have more or less the same opportunities and the same challenges, so we can cope better together if we manage to fusion this capital of money, of ideas as well, and of innovation, because we had also a decision at the summit here in Bucharest to launch the 3Cs Innovation Fund.
Don't you think that there could be some problems related to this common chamber of commerce? That, for example, where, in which country should the foreign investor invest? There are also some questions. How are the projects chosen for the 3Cs Investment Fund? Which projects? Why those projects and other not? And it's not that clear, maybe, from the outsider perspective.
Yes, but I think that a solution can be found. Anyway, it's a competitive market. So if a country like Estonia, for instance, or like Latvia has a better bid than Romania and Poland, that offer should go to, of course, to that country. But you can also have a very big investment that can channelize its headquarters or its working points in different parts of the region. But to do that, you need to have these projects being developed, like Via Carpatia, like Via Baltica, in order to be, and also to have very good flight connections. I have to say that back in July, when I was at the NATO summit, I had to travel by flight to Warsaw and then to Vilnius. I didn't have a direct flight Bucharest-Vilnius. So we need to have a better connection within the region. We have, for instance, this evolution with the small nuclear reactors on civil nuclear energy, because the special envoy of the US President for Climate, John Kerry, was here. And we know that United States wants to build, and it has also put money and resources to build here in Romania the first nuclear reactor of this type outside the United States, here in Romania. But they also want to invest in projects like this in Poland and in other countries. So this is an example of the same type of project that can be developed in many countries of the region.
You said the Chamber of Commerce, but generally in the 3Cs there is some administrative structure, some office lacking.
Yeah, there is, but let's somehow imagine that the 3Cs initiative is more like the European political community that we had launched last year. The fact is that when you build a bureaucracy within this initiative, you tend to make it maybe less flexible, maybe less adaptive and agile. But also there is a risk, because it gives a sense that nothing is binding over there. You do not have maybe a follow-up. You do not have maybe someone that can, like a general secretariat of the 3Cs initiative. And this could be a topic for the future. If you would have asked me this question, let's say, 1 or 2 or 3 years ago, the answer is, let's see how it goes. Now, with what we see after 8 years, the fact is that we still have impetus, we still have interest in this initiative, as you mentioned, we have 1,000 people, civil society, governments, experts, businessmen that are at the Romanian Palace of Parliament for the business forum. We have leaders coming for all other countries. Now at the summit in Bucharest, we had representatives from Japan, United Kingdom, Turkey, France, the European Commission, Germany, of course, and the United States. So there is an interest. That's why I mentioned there is a time to deliver. Now it is a time to see that this initiative brings something forward, that we have a project that is delivered within the, let's say, the flag of the 3Cs initiative, of course, with European Union money, with capital funds, of course, and also with the help of the United States, because we have to say so. But we can manage to find a solution, let's say, to have a headquarter of the network of chambers in, I don't know, the Baltic countries, to have the headquarters of the 3Cs Initiative Fund in Poland, and have the General Secretariat in Romania, and also to have a special body in Croatia, for instance. So we can find solutions on that, but we also need to give budget to that.
Among those now 13 countries, but 12 countries up to yesterday, there is one which is particularly inactive in the 3Cs initiative. I'm, of course, talking about Austria. Do you think there is a way to change a bit this Austrian attitude towards the 3Cs initiative?
It's funny to ask this question to a Romanian guy that got blocked with Schengen within the European Union because of Austria. Well, there is also a part of this 3Cs initiative. You know that it is a presidential platform. So if you look at the countries in the region, besides, let's say, Lithuania, Romania, Poland, where the power is balanced, equalized between the government and the president, or the president has more powers, in other countries like Hungary, like Austria, for instance, like Croatia as well, we have the governments that are powerful and the presidents that play a more honorary role. And this is the case with Austria, and it is the case with Hungary as well. But we managed to have in different editions of the 3Cs initiative prime ministers. Like now we had Prime Minister Plenković from Croatia. Back in 2018, we had here also President Duda and Prime Minister Morawiecki. So this is a sign. The fact is that in Austria, the president has a more honorary role, but I think it adds to the geography, of course, of this 3Cs initiative, because there are also very important the inner waters, and now we are discussing about the Danube. That is very important. Let's remember that the Danube crosses 10 countries and 4 capitals, out of which 3 of them, Budapest, Bratislava, and Vienna, are within the 3Cs initiative. So I think that bringing Austria more close demands in channelizing those projects that Austria is interested in.
And there is another black sheep in the initiative. Of course, I'm talking about Hungary. Yesterday, during the press conference, I heard that all the countries agreed, all the leaders agreed on the support of Ukraine, but most of them agreed of the need of arming Ukraine. And of course, it's obvious that Hungary wasn't among those who agreed to arm Ukraine. The problem with Hungary wasn't existing before the Russian invasion, but now it's a serious problem, and Hungary seems not to really fit into European Union or into 3Cs initiative, for this instance, within its policy towards Ukraine. And so how could it affect the initiative?
As of now and until now, we saw that many problems, many turbulences in political dialogue within the European Union somehow avoided the 3Cs initiative. So we didn't see Hungary playing the bad boy role here within the initiative. But also the 3Cs initiative is not a political body that brings forward decision that has impact like the European Union, of course, because the 3Cs initiative is an initiative within the European Union. And it was very interesting, the message of President Macron that was delivered yesterday at the summit, a written message to the participants. calling for those countries to help the European strategic sovereignty. But when it comes to Hungary, Hungary has a special interest that you can foresee a predictable dialogue with Hungary, and is the economic dialogue. I don't think that Hungary will step aside and will want to not feel included in an initiative or in a format that can bring economic gains. And I'm saying this to you because we have here in Romania the BRUA pipeline, which was supposed to connect Bulgaria, Romania, Hungary and Austria, especially for the gas that can come from the terminals in Greece, but also from the Romanian gas that we have in the offshore of the Black Sea. But also Hungary was present here with Prime Minister Orban in December last year at the same palace, at the presidential palace, where Azerbaijan, Romania, Georgia and Hungary launched the project of the electric submarine cable under the Black Sea in order to connect the Southern Caucasus to the rest of the European Union through Azerbaijan, Georgia, the Black Sea, Romania and Hungary. So it's a project that it's a very special interest for Hungary. So I think that Hungary will play a positive role in bridging the gap within the region. But when it comes to Ukraine, yes, it's not only the black sheep, it's also the Trojan horse. And we cannot understand, and it's also it lacks historical fair play, because Prime Minister Orban was the guy that brought Hungary into NATO. He was a liberal back then in the end of the 90s. Hungary suffered from the oppression of the Soviet ruling, so it lacks the historical fair play because they were in a situation like this. But you know, here in democracies, citizens are the ones that get to decide. We will have elections in Romania, you'll have also elections in Poland. They decided for Viktor Orban and the Fidesz party. We have to work with them.
So, last question. Short prediction for the elections in Romania next year. What can they change in your foreign policy?
I hope that the main lines of our foreign policy will not be changed, and I think they will not be changed, because we have three main lines, which is the strategic partnership with the United States and raising Romania's profile and influence within the European Union and NATO, and that goes subsequently into the Three Cities initiative, the Bucharest 9 format, and so on, and other regional and bilateral partnerships. And I think that the coalition that will arose to power after the election will manage to do that. Now we have a grand coalition of the center left with the center right here in Romania. There is a scenario that they might continue working together after the elections, depending on who wins what. We have a sort of right wing party called AUR here in Romania that it's very well placed in opinion polls, and they have a very centrifugal, let's say, speech, a more Orban style speech, a more nationalistic speech, and they are also allegedly linked to Russia, and we should see how that goes. But my hope is that within our national fiber, that we are European and transatlantic citizens, we will find somehow the same reason that we found back in 2019 when we had a very pro-European movement, and I hope we can repeat that. It will be difficult because citizens are disappointed, but I hope we can manage to find that energy to bring that forward once again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you as well for having me.
This was the Political Periscope. The podcast is released every Thursday at 7 p.m.